Hello again, this is Josh Carr with The Real Angle, and today we're speaking with Ethan Orley, Managing Partner at Oliver Hospitality. Ethan, how you doing today?
Hey, Josh.
Hey, man.
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. Not only seeing you, but for those of you who've been following the podcast, we're now doing it in high resolution, so you get to see even more of me. So it's, I guess that's a good thing. It's not really clear, actually. Not really clear. Doing what I can. Nonetheless, one thing I always like to get out of the way, because if I don't, someone always emails me. The web address, again, for Oliver Hospitality is what it sounds like. It's oliverhospitality.com. So after we chat, if you want to check out their website, you can. So let's get into it. When did you start your hospitality business?
Actually, in your office, Josh.
Yes. Now that I know, I subleased you a desk forever ago.
Full disclosure for your listening group. Josh was gracious enough to allow me to rent a desk in his office for a very modest sum. I appreciate that.
It was a modest sum.
Many years ago in Tribeca. Actually, I think we moved twice together. We were in our town. Yeah.
Yeah. And we had the pleasure. Well, maybe I can't say that anymore, but the Weinstein companies used to be both upstairs and downstairs from her office, which was far more impressive before he went to jail. So
yeah, there were a few famous people that I rode up the elevator with. The only person I can think of right now is David Hasselhoff.
There we go. Okay, but that's
very
famous.
Tall. He's as tall as they say he is.
There we go. Most actors are short, so that's good to know. That's good to know. No, I never got the pleasure. It was always funny. It always seemed that as soon as I got to the building, anyone famous stopped being in the elevator. So, you know, I apparently it's just me.
Well, you know what? The joke's on them because look how famous you are today.
Thank you. Just like Matt Damon and Ben Affleck. But nonetheless. So good. So you started your business. It's got to be 10 plus years ago at this point.
So it was actually 12 years.
12 years. Okay.
And so I started, just kind of brief background. I was a student at NYU in the real estate finance master's program.
Yep.
And back in 2005, met a business, my current day business partner in class. We both went our separate ways, worked at different companies in New York. I was working buying debt, and he was developing for a group out of New York and some Queens-based projects. Mm-hmm. And we both met up at kind of during the Great Recession, and we had started off looking for apartment deals, REO opportunities, kind of in the class B and C apartment space. The kitchens and bathrooms model. You're familiar with that.
I am very familiar with that.
You know, it was really just shortly thereafter that Philip, I was living in New York at the time, he approached me and said, there's a small hotel that's for sale in Knoxville. And he kind of baited me a little bit. He said, you've traveled, you like hotels. Sure. I was actually trying to figure out how to get into the hotel business. And he goes, and my mom ran a bed and breakfast. And all you do is you fluff the pillows and you take their money and you do it every day.
Sounds easy.
It's pretty straightforward.
Sure.
So he said, oh, it's easy. Let's just do it. So we did it. And a number of people thought it was not a great idea, considering it's traditionally too small to do a 28 room hotel. Knoxville wasn't kind of it wasn't the hottest thing at the time. And we had zero experience doing it, but we had we had grit and gusto. So we got into it 12 years ago, and left the apartment business. And they say once you kind of go hotel, you never go back, and it's true. It's kind of enveloping. We've been in it ever since.
And I get that. I mean, look, the yields are better, but you got to deal with the pain and the agita of running an operating company.
That's it. So I would say a good chunk of my time is spent on operational oversight, despite the fact that we have a very large office. You're kind of in the weeds, and it's fun. I mean, it's engrossing, and that's why people love it so much.
Look, I mean, not to get too into inside baseball, so to speak, but a fond memory I have of when you did sublease space for me was, I guess you were trying to figure out what nuts to come put in the mini bar. And I have this very distinct memory of you bringing in nut samples. And we sat there on a Friday and tasted like smoked cashews versus salted cashews versus whatever. And I mean, I like nuts, you know, but it's, that's, you know, when you run a boutique hotel, you need to think about these things. Like, what kind of cashews do you put in the mini bar? Where, you know, obviously if you're running apartments, you're like, pay the rent, you know, like you're not discussing cashews. So, yeah. But you know, I think, and this is no knock on you, I think there's a certain level of crazy that you have to want to do that and to embrace that. And I think some people probably enjoy that level of detail and other people would just lose their minds. So I think there's a, you know, and that's fine. I think a lot of success is finding something that fits with your personality type. So what kind of deals are you working on these days? What kind of stuff are you looking for in the hotel space?
So, so kind of here's where we're at. So, you know, since I left your office, many, many moons ago, the last 12 years, you know, we've continued to build our portfolio. So we've done probably around 9 hospitality deals, in this period of time. And, so I'm currently in Nashville. So I left New York, almost 10 years ago. Moved my family down to Nashville, where we started an office. We built a hotel after Knoxville. We built a hotel called the Fairlane in Nashville, a 4-star hotel. We built a hotel called the Hotel Claremont in Atlanta. Really cool hotel, kind of landmark, kind of iconic property in Atlanta. That's well known. We did 2 kind of, Airbnb, in kind of, you know, commercial level apartment to Airbnb, pre-Sonder, pre-Stalford, pre-Mint House conversion deals in Nashville, kind of the first self-check-in hotels here in Nashville. Got, you know, ended up selling out of those 2 deals several years ago. Bought a motel in Lake Tahoe, converted that to a boutique hotel, and just opened really 2 hotels in the last 6 months, one in Oxford, Mississippi, which we're calling, which is now rebranded as the Oliver Hotel Oxford.
Exciting.
And also a beautiful outdoor eco-resort, coastal retreat in West Marin, about an hour north of the Golden Gate Bridge outside of San Francisco. That's called Lodge Marconi. So really, we're currently running 6 operating hotels in 4 states.
Okay.
We have a 7th on its way. We have actually it's a DoubleTree hotel. We bought a distressed asset from a fantastic family who we're actually partners with. But it was really just a value add opportunity in Clarksville, which is a growing city outside of Nashville. So we're doing a DoubleTree there. Great.
So it'll stay as a DoubleTree. You're not returning.
Well, it was actually Ramada back in the 80s. Then it became an independent, and we're actually. We're branding it now. We think that's kind of the best life for it. And that's the highest and best use. So really we will be operating 7 hotels. We're up to about 20 people in the corporate leadership team here in the office, running those hotels with property level teams in each property. And so we have a nice size management company at this point. And to answer your question, we are out, you know, looking for new deals. And I would divide those deals up into 2 categories. One, which is newer for us, is third-party management. Okay. So we're looking for third-party opportunities where we can come in and advise a property owner who wants to either convert a building to a hotel or they're just looking for a replacement management company. And then eventually find ourselves in a management position. And our specialty is boutique, independent,
right.
Something that kind of has, you know, something that has the potential to be really interesting and has a strong food and beverage component. The other half of our business, is where we're wearing the investor hat and we're out syndicating money. Or raising from private equity or institutional or family office,
sure.
And looking for opportunities to be owner and operator. And so, you know, we're out looking for both opportunities today.
Well, and so here's a question. When you talk about building an operational business, because you're talking about the management company thing, is the logic there, hey, we've built an in-house operational team, we might as well just get economies of scale? Is that what's driving that? Or what's driving the desire to grow the management company?
Yeah, you know, it's really the former. The easiest way to scale up a management business is to take on third party. So, you know, it's hard to manage for other people. I mean, it can be really rewarding, but it can also be hard. I mean, you know, if you had a choice to, you know, you got $1 billion, you do your own deals, or you go partner with somebody and have to talk about everything twice. I mean, it is generally harder, but sure. If you can get a good flow, you know, they could be your best, you know, referral agents, and there could be more runway. So it's really an opportunity for us to continue to build out the management company and spread our fixed costs. And ultimately it helps us and them. And so, you know, we have about, we have just under 500 keys under management, which is small. But we also have a lot of small hotels. And so, you know, we are looking to pick up at least another 500 keys over the next 3 years.
Yeah. And, you know, small is always relative. I mean, it's funny, yeah. You know, our industry is always growth focused, right? So on one hand, 500 keys doesn't sound like a lot, but to a guy with one hotel, it is, you know, it's all right. A matter of perspective. I mean, it's
all perspective.
Yeah. I mean, it's big enough.
And overhead. So the more overhead you take on, the more enticed you are to go out there and you're like, oh, I'd better pick up another property.
Right. And now that I'm paying for this nice office space and I have this bookkeeper, you know, she's leaving at 3 o'clock. She could work longer, you know, like just do more. You know, we've already set you up with a computer and stuff. You know, it's funny. I mean, I've done university teaching for years. And the thing I always found so funny about universities is they have these very expensive facilities, and then the weekends the facilities are unused. You know, you paid for the building, you know, do something with it, for God's sakes. You know, find a use. It doesn't even matter what. But right, so I guess the other thing that's interesting about talking to you is, I mean, you now have a couple of hotels which have the name Oliver on them. You've got other hotels that are in the boutique-ish family of things. Do you think long-term the Oliver brand becomes its own thing? I mean, or put another way, have you seen the benefits yet where someone stays at one of the six of your boutique hotels and then they say, well, now that I checked out this one, let me stay at the other five? Are you seeing much cross-selling yet?
Great question. So I think when we started this, we even early on, over, you know, a decade ago, we were like, oh, we'll just keep doing Oliver hotels. But because we are kind of positioned to do opportunistic deals, in the sense that we find opportunities that just present themselves. It's not like we're saying we want to do five Olivers. Let's go find something that's exactly this box in these five cities. We're saying, oh, wow, here's an interesting deal that we can buy at $40 a square foot. This location needs a boutique hotel. And wow, this building looks like nothing else we have in our portfolio.
Right.
Would it be fair to call it an Oliver, right? So, you know.
Doubletree one you're mentioning, which is, it's a Doubletree.
Right. So, right. So, you know, we're really, you know, especially for this, you know, your audience on this show, I would imagine we're all real estate trained.
Yes.
So really, Philip and I come from a real estate training background. And so we're deal guys who happen to fall into the hotel world. And so we're kind of our deal first, then kind of in seconds. And that's out of respect for the brand, but also just, you know, a good deal is better than, you know, a bad deal that just happens to do well for the brand.
You're not going to leave money on the table just because it doesn't fit with the vision. If you make a buck.
We need to, you know, ultimately the deal needs to make sense for our investors, and our investors really, the return for them comes first. And if we can present a good deal, the rest is gravy or is a lot easier.
Now, that said, I could see a world for you down the road where it does become about, well, let's raise money to just grow the brand. But that's a very different conversation.
Right. And so what happened this year is, you know, we did the Claremont. The Claremont was already kind of a famous name. So you can't, you know, it's like the Hotel Chelsea. You know, you would never rebrand that as something else because it's too famous. Mm-hmm, The Fairlane was a 4-star high-rise hotel. Didn't feel right. You know, the Station House Inn was an old, you know, 1970s Best Western. It was exterior corridor. It could have been. And maybe we made a mistake, but it was really just trying to protect the brand. So, but this year we actually, we bought a property in Oxford, Mississippi, downtown, a half mile from the campus of Ole Miss. And it was called the Chancellor's House. And we thought it was a great opportunity to extend our Oliver brand for the first time. And so we had a little pushback internally. And I think everyone is very, very pleased that we decided to expand. So when you go to the OliverHotel.com, it actually gives you the option to choose two different cities.
That's
and I
exciting.
Think to do that. I think that was a really kind of good kind of like, all right, we're you know, here's something. And actually internally, we've discussed, you know, really taking that brand deeper into kind of southeastern college towns or just generally tertiary markets in the southeast or across the country. And we think it's a great brand, and we've been very successful thus far.
That's exciting. No, and then as you said, it's like you're picking a part of the country and try to build some critical mass there because right. we're a big country. No, it's right. it's funny. I was talking to a gentleman from the UK for a previous episode, and the reoccurring theme when you talk to someone from the UK is just how gosh darn small their country is versus us. So yeah, you do. You have to pick an area. You can't just say we're just right. the US. So that makes a lot of sense. So not to get too into the weeds here, but on your deals, generally you've done stuff deal by deal. You're raising equity for a specific deal, right? You're not. There's no like fund that you're doing or something like that.
We have toyed with the idea of doing like a GP fund or just raising a specific hotel fund. You know, every time you try to do it, someone tells you, you know, a good reason why you shouldn't do it. You don't have to do it.
Sure.
You know, but you know, sure. 20 million is too small. You got to go to 50. If you're going to do 50, you might as well do 100. The paperwork. And then you have to have a real focus, right? So like, you know, the right. good news is that every 3 years, Josh, there's a recession. There's
sure.
There's COVID. There's always some story to tell. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I do think that at some point we will do a fund, but it hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, you'll grow into it organically, which honestly is the right way to do it. I mean, you've got equity partners who like what you're doing, why rock the boat? I mean, if people give you money for the deals you do, then wash, rinse, repeat, get bigger.
Yeah, and it's
an
good,
operational
you know,
team.
It's like unlimited sidecar opportunities for everybody. Everybody just gets to pick what they want to be in. It's just easier for everybody. Mm-hmm. But we, for the last decade, we have syndicated our deals with, high net worth, kind of clubbing the deals. Mm-hmm. You know, that starts to peter out at $5 or $10 million. It gets more difficult when you're raising checks of $50,000 to $100,000.
Right.
$250,000, even $1 million is an anchor. So in the last couple of years, we've started to branch out as the deals have gotten larger. And we were lucky enough to bring on Cedar Capital Partners to buy our Fairlane Hotel last year in Nashville. And they retained us in a management capacity, and which has been great. And the idea there was to kind of dip our toe together in the water and see if there was an opportunity to do other deals together. And I look forward to that. And we also brought in a family office out of D.C. To fund the entire equity component of the mixed-use project that contains the DoubleTree out in Clarksville. But it's also a parking deck. It's 50,000 square feet of retail. So the idea is to continue to kind of promote those opportunities.
Right, and then if they like that first one, they'll do more. I mean,
and so right now we are, you know, the latest deal we're raising for is we're raising $15 million of equity on a $65 million project that we own. We own the building. It's the former, I call it the former Grand Hotel of Knoxville.
Okay.
Knoxville was really in its heyday in the 20s. Well, it certainly has come way, way back. One of my favorite cities in the country. And it's been a very kind city to us for our business, but we are in the, you know, in that situation, we are looking for that single family office or three family offices to fund a deal of that size.
Right, because at that point you're not raising $25,000 checks, which okay. I totally get. I mean, it's a yeah. and also, I mean, and maybe this is just my two cents, but I think sometimes with things that are value add turnaround opportunities, family offices tend to be more sophisticated, so they understand what you're talking about. Whereas a lot of times when you syndicate stuff, if it doesn't photograph well, if it's not pretty, they can't really wrap their brains around it.
Well, not only that, but listen, I mean, we're not perfect. I mean, we try to underwrite as best we can, but there are cost overruns. There are time overruns.
It's development. Stuff goes wrong.
Do a capital call, or even do a second capital call on small, call it unsophisticated, but high net worth individuals who are just looking for, hey, want to do a fun deal. You told me it's going to pay a 20% IRR over the
course of— I just want yield. I want my yield.
We're going the wrong direction here. And that does happen.
Sure.
And it's no one's fault. And so it's easier, you know, in more sophisticated, higher risk, value add, opportunistic deals, I think, to talk with a family office that you can have that call. They can be on your calls. They know exactly what's going on, and they can strike a check easily, and be in for the long term. So,
and also, and I imagine with a family office, when you're dealing with more sophisticated entities, they also have contributions they can make, you know, like they understand what you're doing, you know, so their opinion matters, because they might say, hey, have you considered doing XYZ? And you're like, good point, you know, because they have something to add. Well, and this gets me to one question I always like to ask, which is, what kind of hotel deals are good but not for you? Like, what— I mean, I understand what you're looking for. What are you not looking for? What is stuff that works for another operator that you're just like, that's not our bailiwick, that doesn't ring our bell, so to speak?
I think that, you know, ultimately, listen, as operators, we could theoretically take on anything, right? You bring in the right expertise,
right.
You know, it's really operations are operations, but we don't have internally, call it the institutional knowledge or kind of the capacity to take on a, you know, 300-400 key conference hotel, you know, in Orlando, right? We could hire the right GM, we could write the right regional, but I don't know if I'm bringing anything to the table there myself.
Right.
You know, but if the deal was large enough, we could hire in that expertise, right? You know, I mean, any great company, you know.
Yeah, but in theory, if the deal were good and it was that kind of product, someone else would do it instead of you. So
right. So I think you know, our box is, you know, 50 to 200 keys in a hotel.
Okay.
You know, we like, you know, urban core, but we can also kind of go out. You know, South Lake Tahoe has been a really interesting market for us. It's quite seasonal, so you got to understand how to kind of hold cash during the good times, because it's there are kind of, you know, peaks and valleys there. But you know, I don't think we would be great, you know, economy operators. I think we've got just too much corporate overhead. You know, we have a four-person digital marketing and social media team,
right? Which is great for boutique stuff, but that's not the airport hotel.
Really, so we've got to feed the model where we can put forward, you know, just incredible, you know, email marketing, graphic design, social media, and which is why food and beverage is so good to us. It's challenging, but it allows us to kind of tell the full story.
Right, you're selling an experience. I get it.
Experience, places that can tell a story.
Yeah. Well, and that gets me a question I always like to ask, which is the secret sauce question, and I think you basically answered it, which is you're selling someone. It's more than just a room for the night. It's the whole, the experience around the room. It's the food, it's the decor, it's all that good stuff.
Yeah.
Which, you know, again, I always find this stuff amusing. This gets back to the cashew conversation, you know?
You gotta love it, Josh.
I mean, it's, which is fine. I mean, you probably don't remember this, but we had a whole conversation probably over a decade ago about thread counts. Do you remember this with the pillows?
Yeah.
You brought me two pillows and asked me to rub my face against them to see if I could tell the difference thread count was. And I, of course, just being apparently a troll, was like, I don't know, they're pillows. Like, I was having trouble distinguishing the thread count quality, you know, which is good. I mean, if you get away with a lower thread count, good for you, you know.
That must disappoint your mother. Your mother was in the fashion world, you know?
Yes, my mother worked in the fashion business. And then she married a man in commercial real estate, and here I am. So certain genes did not pass. I mean, I appreciate the arts. I appreciate design. I also can't draw to save my life, you know? So I think appreciating the arts is different than wanting to be actively involved in them. And in the same way, I appreciate good decor. I can appreciate the fact that you're delivering a quality experience. I might be a little too much of a cynic sometimes to enjoy it, but you know, such is life, but that's fine. That's fine. Interesting. So just to talk finance for a moment, I mean, interest rates have been up and down. The economy has, shall we say, been challenging for hotels because of what happened over the last few years. I'm sure COVID was not a walk in the park for you because it wasn't for anybody. What's it look like these days in terms of availability of equity? I mean, we talked about equity a bit. You got guys, that's great. Availability of debt? Like, what are you seeing out there as a hotel operator?
I mean, it's non-existent at typical commercial terms. It's very much available, at kind of, from private lenders, whatever you call them. I mean, they're in full swing today.
Non-bank lending is all the rage, high yield, bridge lending.
So if you want it, you can get it for a price. Sure. And so we had one hotel that we termed out, we matured out, and, sure. We kept extending. And we actually decided to take it back privately. So we actually raised an SPV for $9 million. And we actually offered our investors the opportunity to participate in a debt offering at 11%.
So you basically became your own lender in a sense.
We became our own lender. We kept them separate. I mean, sure. So if one wasn't able to kind of, perform, I mean, the other half would be able to foreclose.
On yourself, essentially. Sure.
Right. Which nobody wants to get into.
So no, I mean, that's weird, but I hear you. I mean, you did your own debt offering. Now I'm going to ask a question just to be crazy here. If you're raising debt money to provide your entity a loan, which is great, have you considered building that as a secondary business and maybe becoming a debt lender for other hotel guys? Or is that not something you want to put your brains into yet?
I think it's certainly a good business right now. And I think it is a great business just generally.
Sure.
I don't think we have the bandwidth today to take that on.
Fair enough.
We are, so not only are we, doing our own management, but we also do our own owner's representation. And so we have a two person, I mean, outside of myself and my partner, Philip, we have two outstanding folks in our office who are actively, building, acting as our own kind of in-house owner's representation and procurement agents. Right. So we have a construction business, we got a management business, and I think, in order to pursue, lending, we'd probably have to bring in another person in.
You'd have to bring in a professional who just does that. Yeah, who's your lending guy. And don't get me wrong. I mean, I think something that a lot of people don't appreciate until they run an operating business is there are a lot of different ways you can make money, Right. So it's just a question of where do you want to put your time? And some of that's about what's the most lucrative, and some of that's about your skill set and also just tastes and preferences. What do you enjoy doing? Because, I mean, when you tell me that you raised $11 million to essentially lend money to an – not $11 million, $9 million to lend money to an entity at 11%, some people would hear that and go, well, heck, build a lending platform, And
right.
And but by that's the way, not your background. That's
right. And by the way, 11% is only because it's, where we are today. But hopefully when we refinance, that 11 becomes an 8 or a 9.
Right, and if the commercial banks get back into lending,
it's a short-term deal, kind of call it among friendlies. But outside of that, we are looking to raise construction debt, about $35 million for this project out of Knoxville, and as you can imagine, it's been difficult the last 6 months. And I think we're gonna end up going back out to market. This first quarter next year, thinking that I think we're going to get a little bit further along, And but we've had to be creative, right? I mean, you know, structured finance, you know, is the only way to do it. You know, C-PACE, tax credits, you know, layering pref. I mean, you can get crazy. If the project's successful, then, you know, you can get out and collapse the whole structure and kind of go into a traditional kind of perm. And so one thought we have had, you know, is just go out, you know, get construction debt at 11%, as crazy as that sounds,
sure.
Build the project, and hopefully we get into a building environment in the next 24 months where costs come down 15%.
Right.
And so we get the benefit of lower costs. And by the time you exit out of this thing in 24 months, when I say exit, I mean, you know, get out of your construction phase and work towards stabilization, as you just happen to hit it just perfectly. And you come in for that soft landing when you know, the feds have reduced rates. So that's just that's a gamble. And we all take those gambles. But, you know, Josh, how many times are there where you just hit everything perfectly? I mean, you just got to take some level of risk.
Yeah, no, I mean, unfortunately, there's nothing risk-free. I mean, if you want risk-free, don't leave your house. You know, I mean, like, and the joke is, and then if you never leave your house, you could still die of a heart attack. You know, like, yeah. it doesn't, like, unfortunately, life is risk, and that's okay. I think it comes down to a matter of just what level of risk you're comfortable with, which gets to more philosophical questions about, you know, where you are in your life and what kind of reserves you have. I mean, all that kind of stuff, you know, that's more philosophical.
So listen, I mean, at the end of the day, good basis, good basis, good basis. And that's really kind of been our recipe as a company is we've always found real estate that, you know, allows us a little bit more elbow room than I think a traditional, you know, if you had a fund and you just had to go out and buy, you know, in good times and bad, I think, you know, you're putting yourself out there a little bit more. We are a little bit more nimble. We don't have the pressure to put money out. When we find an interesting deal, we go and raise for it, which is the other benefit of not having a fund. And so as a result, really every deal we've done over the last decade, if you look at kind of the incoming basis on the real estate, it's always been very, very good. Another reason why we have actually never done a ground up deal. We've always purchased existing bricks because, you know, not only do you get the land, but you get the bricks and then you also get the tax credits, you know, theoretically paid for the bricks. You kind of get the building for free in a sense.
And ground up's a whole other level of risk and skill set, which is that's not your background or your skill set. You know, I mean, often when I talk to people who do development, they often, you know, have a background in the trades, they ran construction management operations, you know, and that's how they got into development, which is fine. You know, but that's not, you can only do so many things. I'm always amused when I look at real estate syndicators who raise money from small guys and, you know, they say, well, I'm going to be get an acquisition fee and a financing fee, and I'm going to be the attorney and I'm going to be the mortgage broker. And it's like, look, no one can do everything. You know, you can only do so many. If you're really lucky, you can do one thing well and maybe two, you know, but you can't do five. That's just life. That's life. Well, look, this has been very good. It's fun to talk about the hotel thing. I've always been fascinated by hotel operations. Strategically, it sounds really interesting which way you're going. I don't know. I went through my questions. Is there anything else you wanted to throw out there as far as visions for the future of hotels? Well, I will ask one question, one final question, and it's something you mentioned much earlier. You mentioned that you did a couple of hotels which were like self-check-in hotels. You want to talk about that for a moment? Because I know what it is, but I also don't know if everyone else does.
So, you know, if you've ever rented an Airbnb – and they give you a code to enter the door and there's nobody there to greet you, that is a self-check-in hotel.
Right, right.
And so what happened in the last 10 years is that larger institutional or venture-backed groups have entered the space. And they've said, okay, it's not just, you know, your one-off apartment. It is, let's take it down an entire building and let's put a passcode in every single door.
Right.
On a 100 room apartment building, and it becomes self-check-in.
Right.
And so that's an easy way to eliminate your front desk. You know,
replacing staff with technology.
Full-time employee. You know, your housekeeping is only once a week or whatever it happens to be. And sure. So, you know, that's been all the rage. Now, that space has transformed itself, just like the WeWorks and the Industriouses and the Serendipities have changed, gone from where they would lease the space and mm-hmm. say, we're going to pay you a guaranteed rate plus a little bit of upside, and we'll take on all the risk. But then they had these short-term contracts. But they were signing a long-term contract with the landlord and a short-term with the tenant. The same thing happened in the self-check-in Airbnb.
Yeah, the hotel space, right?
So Stay Alfred actually went bankrupt for that reason, because mm-hmm. they signed a long-term deal. And then, you know, when things went belly up during COVID, they were out because nobody showed up, and they still had a guaranteed payment to make to the landlord. Saunders still around, and they've grown rapidly, but I think their stock price has taken a tumble. I think they're transforming themselves into management brands,
right?
And you see that, you know, Hilton is a management brand, right? So everyone eventually figures out that they can reduce risk and increase profits by just charging a fee to a landlord. Right.
Own nothing, just be a manager.
Sure. However the property does, you get 95% of it, and we take a piece. Sure. So really, that's what we did here, is we took an apartment building, both actually 24 unit apartment buildings, A-plus locations in Nashville. The landlord came to us and said, hey, here's a couple $1 million. Can you convert this to a hotel? I said, great. And that was a great business at the time. It still is. That was an area where I think we like to kind of spread our wings, and we like to do creative, interesting projects. So
no, it's fun. And that's honestly why I was asking. I think there are just so many different ways you can slice and dice this, which, again, coming from where the traditional apartment space, we have a limited amount of ways we can make money, whereas you guys have just more.
And that's why we like them. I every day I wake up and I go, what can we do? I mean, it's unlimited, Josh. Right. It's so much fun.
That's a lot of fun.
And I would just let anybody know if you've got a hotel project you're considering and you want it to be an independent hotel, we'd love to throw our hat in the ring as a potential management partner. If you're looking to put money to work in a boutique deal as an investor or as a co-GP, we're looking for partners.
You want to talk
every day. That's it.
Look, I appreciate that, and I will say to you what I say to everyone, which is, and if by some chance being on this podcast makes you a gazillion dollars, buy me a decent bottle of scotch, and I will appreciate it. That's it. I'm there. Very reasonable commission. I'm a simple man. I'm a very simple man. Nonetheless, Ethan, it has been. I'm seriously just a simple man.
And a can of nuts.
Nuts. I've really built quite the scotch collection over the years. You know, it's a very civilized way of working. Well, nonetheless, thanks again for joining me. This has been excellent. And for those of you who are again who've tuned in, OliverHospitality.com. This was Ethan Orley, and I'm Josh Carr, and I'll see all of you again next week. Thanks again, Ethan.
Thanks, Josh. Good to see you.